Welcome to Hazard Class, the podcast created for and about you, the emergency responder.
How you doing there, folks? Welcome to the show. I'm Mark Norman.
I'm Dave Godin.
And I'm Jesse Taylor,
also known as JT. And this is Hazard Class, the show where, if you're not careful, you just might learn something. Folks, thanks for joining. So, Dave, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, sir?
I can't complain. If I did, no one would listen. JT, how about you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
All right. Good to hear. We're going to introduce ourselves very shortly. But folks, this is a podcast that the three of us have been working to put together for the last few weeks because first of all, we all work for 908 Devices. Disclaimer. As far as I know, we still work for 908. Right, Dave?
Yeah. You know, I haven't checked my email in a few minutes, but
yeah. So I think that's the case. But we're all involved in the emergency response community in some way. And this show, Hazard Class, is intended for us to talk about topics that are relevant to emergency responders from our unique perspectives. We're going to introduce ourselves very, very shortly. But basically, just so you folks know, again, we're all with 908 Devices. We're part of the FAST team. So, Dave, do you know what FAST stands for?
The Field Applications Science Team.
You got it.
He said with a lot of confidence.
Jesse, and we were talking offline, had a different acronym in mind.
Oh, yeah. I thought it should be the Field Applications Research Team.
We proposed that, but management said, yeah, it doesn't make a good logo on a shirt.
Right.
So, but what's that mean? First of all, we're all scientists in one way or another. So FAST, field, we spend time in a field, at least we used to, right, Dave? I mean, Dave, you put about 300,000 miles on your frequent flyer card in 2019. My goodness.
Yeah, I don't know why I took everyone else 80 days to go around the world. I did it in a couple of weeks there for a while.
But in light of COVID, we've been sort of holed up at our homes, but we're in the field. We're working with folks just like you. Applications, what's that mean? How do you use not just our products at 908 Devices, but all the other stuff? And as Dave's going to talk, he's been in the field prior to working at 908 using other stuff. And JT, same way, right?
Right.
Have some experience.
That's a great point. We deal in applications and missions, not necessarily individual technologies.
And for all the people on LinkedIn, I'm not in software applications, all right? Applications. It's not, so quit messaging me. It's product applications, basically how to use the device. Science, obviously. We are scientists and use that as our foundation. And of course, team, there's no I in team.
That's good, because right? It would really ruin the acronym if there was.
Yeah. There is a me, if you rearrange it, but I don't know if that makes any sense, but we're part of that team and we spend a lot of time with you folks, and we're here to talk to you about things relevant to you, technologies, not just 908 stuff, different technologies. We're going to talk about things that are of importance to you, science, detection, what Dave had for lunch yesterday, if that's, of interest. Jesse. You know, his 10-mile hike up the southern mountains of, yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, Dave probably had a sandwich that Danny sketched with crayons.
Very well could have. Very well could have. And speaking of Danny, I'll mention him in a second. But it's not just going to be us. We will have a guest occasionally. I got some guests lined up. When I say lined up, I've written their names down, and I mean to text them. So, I'm hoping for guys like Bobby and Mike from the Hazmat guys, Christina Baxter, folks like that to join us. So that's what we're going to do. Real quick. So we are the sort of host of this show. Now, our program director is our marketing director, Alyssa. Now, everyone listening doesn't know her, but she runs our marketing team. She's actually the voiceover you hear on the intro and the outro you hear at the end of the show. She's great. Fantastic. Jesse and Dave, you know that she gave us two key rules here. One of them was try to keep it under 30 minutes, right? So I'm watching the time, so I might have to move us along and cut us off. Under 30 minutes, she said. That's key. More importantly, she said, do you remember?
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean. So did you guys get the memo I had in front of me?
I washed my hands for 20 seconds before recording this podcast.
Yeah, these are the words not to say on the show. Some of these I didn't know were words, and I'm actually kind of embarrassed to be reading them like you said, Dave. So so we'll do our best to keep it appropriate for all the firefighters and military and emergency responders. And speaking of those folks, we just want to acknowledge all those brave men and women who keep us safe and hopefully are listening to this podcast. They are obviously a fire department, hazmat teams, law enforcement, narcotics, military, right? Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. I include the Coast Guard. And of course, all those three-letter agencies. CBP, NSA, who am I missing?
I think like the NSA was the one you're not supposed to mention.
TSA, yeah. Now they're listening.
Triggered their algorithms.
We love you folks. We appreciate everything you do for keeping us safe. And you mentioned Danny, JT. So Alyssa is our program director. She's not a producer. That is my 14-year-old son, Danny.
Right on.
And he does a fantastic job. So if you have any complaints about the technical quality, send to my son and he will appropriately not respond to you. So, all right.
Right.
So that's kind of what the show is. Let's talk about ourselves. Now, this show, this first, if you will, inaugural show, we're going to get into sort of a brief, maybe 10-minute discussion on the evolution of field technology over the last about 20 years. Again, from our unique perspective. So we'll get into that in a minute. But why are the three of us on here? Good question. I don't know. We decided to do this. But JT, now you, I would argue, have the most interesting background of the three of us. So just take a couple minutes to tell the folks who are listening who you are, sort of what your background is and your areas of expertise and why you're part of this podcast team.
All right. I'm JT, also known as Jesse Taylor. And I'm a physical scientist or a chemist and specialize in explosives. I've done a lot of professional work in chemical, biological, and radiological defense, like testing out defensive technologies like sensors, detectors, and protective gear. And I've also done some overseas contract work training U.S. military and our allies on these technologies. And also I see in the notes some interesting tidbit. I have been on TV doing explosives.
Yeah. Jesse is the TV star. Real quick, give the folks a little bit of background on what you've done there.
Oh yeah, I did. I've done a couple Mythbusters shows and worked with Adam Savage on Savage Builds, and I did a show on Netflix with the same cast, crew, and production company, and Outdoor Weapons or Hollywood Weapons on the Outdoor Channel, as well as let's see.
Yeah,
I know there's one more.
you're a big star is the bottom line. So I think if you go to Netflix and just search Jesse Taylor, you're going to see a bunch of stuff. Is that how it works?
This is going to be a live read of his IMDb page is what this is.
Right.
No, in all seriousness, it's fantastic. And I mentioned my son, Danny. We do a podcast separate from this. Jesse's been on it and Danny got a fake stick of dynamite, I hope, Jesse, but signed by Adam Savage, right?
Yeah, Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman signed that inert training prop. And so, yeah, I passed it on to Danny as a thank you for being on the show.
Do you think we can get them on the show? Yeah,
that would be great. Especially talking about technology.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'll have to talk to Alyssa, program director, make that happen. But Jesse, obviously, how many years you've been in this business? What, good 19, 20 years?
Yeah, since just before 9/11.
A lot of experience, explosives expert. So you're going to learn a lot from Jesse and his perspective on that arena. And again, a scientist at heart. And now, Dave, I want to go to you.
All right.
You're a little younger than Jesse and me. You're sort of the baby of the group. But you are the only one who has served. And not jail time. I mean, served like in the military.
But, I mean, they're definitely not mutually exclusive.
Well, fair enough. But give folks a little bit on your background, because it's equally fascinating.
Yeah. So as introduced, my name is Dave Godin. I spent about 5 years in the United States Army as a chemical officer. During that time, I served as the analytical team leader and training officer for the 110th Chemical Battalion Technical Escort, which is really just a unit that specializes in seaburny operations. So chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and also high explosives. I left the military after having served one combat tour in Iraq, where I did the forensic analysis of all the improvised explosive devices for a year. That got me really passionate about forensic sciences as it impacts the warfighter, but also gave me a really good perspective on what happens when we put technologies like the ones we're going to discuss on this podcast in the field, in the hands of field operators, so that they can make real-time intelligence decisions based off of actionable results from this sort of technology, rather than having to rely on a laboratory. So that, again, that got me really interested in that. So I left the military, did a brief stint as an EMT, but then I went and got my degree in forensics, and I've been working to bring that technology farther out into the field ever since.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you came to us pretty much when you left grad school. You have your master's in forensics. I think it's fair. Gotta say that. Been with us 908, what, 3 years or so?
Just about now. Yeah, about 3 years. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you've established a lot of relationships with customers, especially in law enforcement because of your forensics background. But the field experience and the knowledge you bring from the science side, fantastic. So great to have you as part of the team here, Dave. And just real quick, myself, Mark Norman, again, I have a PhD in analytical chemistry from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Not Greensboro, not Charlotte, not Wilmington, Chapel Hill. So go Heels. Left grad school 2001, got a job in this arena, which we'll talk about, and have been working this ever since, again, the last about 19 years. So not a responder, never been on a response call, but I've worked with tons of different folks like the listeners of this podcast who are, you know, again, in fire services, law enforcement, military, what have you, and have learned a ton, but I've also done what I can to bring my sort of experience to them. So again, among the three of us, some unique backgrounds and hopefully some unique perspectives as we talk about the various topics related to emergency response in this podcast. So, gang, with that, I'm ready to get into the topic at hand. But first, we got to pay the bills. So, I'm going to do the live read. Alyssa gave me this copy, which is a sentence, two sentences long. So we'll do what we can. But here's what it is. So real-time threats, real-time detection. The MX908 is a multi-mission tool, kind of like a Gerber, right? Yeah, Jesse, you have a Gerber, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gerber, Leatherman.
Multi-pronged by elite responders like you folks, conducting chemical, explosive, priority drug, and hazmat operations around the world, literally around the world. I think Jesse, Dave, and myself, before all this COVID stuff hit, the last place we went was outside Jesse, you and I were in Turkey.
Yeah, we were overseas.
And Dave, you were in, where the hell were you?
I was in London the day we closed or made the announcement that we'd be closing our borders. So I had to scoot it back in time to make that deadline. But yeah, we were all outside of America at the time.
We were supposed to go to Norway or?
Yeah, I was supposed to take a brief side trip to Norway that obviously got canceled.
Yeah. Most people taking brief side trips to Norway. So here's a little insight into Dave's. But no, folks, we're all over the world. Trace level threat detection and discriminating selectivity deliver real-time actionable intelligence in seconds. Not minutes, not hours, seconds, right? So for more information, visit www.908devices.com/MX908. I don't think you have to say the www. But it's 908devices.com/MX908. So there you go. What do you think? Good stuff?
Big fan.
Yeah, love it.
Great stuff.
All right. Topic at hand, the evolution of field technology. I have a frog in my throat.
Yikes. Sounds like he's extracting
myself.
It.
I just muted. I'll come back. All right. Time for the topic at hand. Now, evolution of field technology. So, look, in 10 minutes, folks, we're not going to cover all the details of how technology has evolved the last 20 years for hazmat. That's not the point of this show. This is an introductory show. Get to know us and kind of get some of the topics we're talking about. So, we're going to sort of start where it all really began with the advanced technologies, at least, and that is really 9/11. I think it's where it kicks off. Now, prior to that, hazmat started back in the 70s, and even today, hazmat teams, we all know, you guys know, you use four gas meters, multi-gas meters, you know, pH, various stuff, and very important stuff, a lot of that dictated by OSHA regulations, certainly here in the U.S., So that's kind of the baseline, right, guys, as far as what everyone uses.
Right.
Yeah, and that was the baseline for almost a couple of decades, really, without any innovation or impetus to change that basic hazmat loadout.
Yeah. But what happened, and again, I mentioned this in my introduction, back in 2001. Actually, I joined a company in 2001. They had already come out with a field portable FTIR. Okay. But they didn't have an application, really a market for it. They were looking at forensics and pharmaceuticals and things, but it could identify unknowns in the field, powders, you name it. But it really wasn't until 9/11 kicked off that things like that, and as we'll kind of allude to some of the other technologies, sort of took off, as it were. Now, Dave, we talked offline, and I think you have a great perspective on this. And again, using sort of post 9/11, and when we say 9/11, folks, in terms of hazmat, we're really talking about the anthrax attacks in October, right? And then all the white powder scares that went from that. But Dave, you have had a great perspective on how things changed from a public threat perspective. So kind of talk about that from your point of view.
Right. And I think it's important to note that 9/11 changed the threat landscape in addition to the Amerithrax attacks, which we'll discuss as well. But really what happened was there was this change. So prior to that, any sort of hazmat situation was just that. It was maybe just hazardous material. At worst, it was a public health concern. Mm-hmm. But because of 9/11 and also the Amerithrax attacks that came afterwards, there was really this escalation in threat level where, you know, we had this perception that America was under attack. And quite validly, as we'd just seen, you know, an attack on sovereign soil. And so we started becoming very concerned that, you know, that any hazardous material event may actually be a deliberate attack or a deliberate release. And so we started bringing chemical warfare agent detection equipment and bringing that to the hazmat response. Nerve agent antidote kits started getting distributed across you know, states for medical response. And then obviously we started leveraging technologies, as we'll discuss, to confirm or deny that any white powder that we encountered was or was not anthrax, because that was a really large concern for years after this event. And so just the threat level change from, hey, this is probably something benign, let's figure out what it was, to sort of the opposite, where every material and incident really had to be de-escalated from a potential terrorist attack back down to what it was prior to 9/11.
Right.
So, yeah, it was really a lot of things changed post 9/11. Again, the Marathrax we'll get into in a different show, which is a whole other topic. But it really was how the threat landscape changed. Like when you have an overturned, you know, tanker truck on I-95, that's not, it's a public hazard, but it's not a threat in terms of a terrorist threat necessarily. So, things really changed. Now you had these white powders, which is a whole other topic we'll get into, that, everyone and their grandmother thought, oh my gosh, I got some powder in my, my bathroom. Ah,
must oh, be, yeah, that was a big terrorist. That was a big issue in all industries. I did a lot of consulting work with Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection in the early 2000s because they had been opening containers at ports of entry with white powder in there for ages. And then suddenly they needed technologies that could quickly, like Dave said, de-escalate that threat or give them some confirmation or nexus to a potential terrorist activity or high threat material. So those technologies did become in high demand.
Now, another thing I want to talk about, which is, again, an element we'll get into in other shows, but what were the enabling things of those technologies? It's one thing to say a technology, like FTIR has been around in the lab for decades. But what made it useful, in the early 2000s for emergency responders? That was a technology, a sampling technique called ATR. Attenuated total reflection. Dave, I know you used the hazmat ID in your early days, or at least when you were in theater. Again, ATR interface. That was the key. And it basically meant you could just put a pile of stuff on something and get a measurement and go. So another sort of theme we'll talk about is what are the key elements to all the various technologies that make them usable, right, in the hands of a responder. Responders who are well-trained, but aren't scientists.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. It's not just about making technology smaller and portable, right? It's really about making it more accessible for the field user.
Yeah. And then along those lines, so infrared went about, Hazmat ID came out about 2003. And then another company, Ahura Scientific, came out with a Raman. And Raman really kind of took things in a different direction because it's similar to infrared, right, in that you're looking at molecular information, but depending on how it's configured, you can just point the laser at the product and get a result.
Oh, yeah.
And then, Jesse, you had some experience. Yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
Right, that point and shoot really was the breakthrough for the application to explosives, being able to do no contact sampling or through containers, that, especially with the improvised explosive threats that were in theater in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places unmentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there've been a lot of different flavors then of Raman that's come out since about 2004-ish. And that's probably another show, the different Ramans and what are their, you know, strengths, limitations, what have you. And that's a great topic for an expert guest. But one of the things that was really critical there, Jesse, I think you can appreciate that Ahura came out with was the mixture analysis approach. So with the infrared and the Raman, you basically can say, oh, if I see a spectrum from component A and a spectrum from B, I can sort of figure it out and say, oh, this must be A and B, you know?
That was massive.
Yeah. So that is kind of where it went, infrared and the Raman. Now, speaking of mixtures, again, this is a whole other show, GC mass spec. Now, Dave, you spent a fair amount of time with this. I know you worked with it in theater, and I'm sure you worked with it in grad school. But now we're talking about pure and real mixture analysis. So the GC being the separation piece, the racetrack, as it were, that separates mixture components, and then the mass spec, which identifies them. That was actually around before 9/11. I recall the HAPSITE was around well before then, more for environmental applications, but then it sort of found some space in the hazmat world, you know, because of, and another topic, Dave, that you kind of brought up that maybe is a good point to kind of address is the money that became available, because those are not cheap devices.
No, absolutely. I think Yeah, that first GCMS, I want to say it was around 2001, but as you said, it was really coming out as an industrial hygiene tool. So similar, right? It was doing industrial hygiene at the site or near the site after they gave a, gathered an environmental sample for analysis, but it was still chemists using it, and it was intended for chemists. It wasn't like a lot of the other technologies that were necessarily deliberately built, both in form function and user interface, for use by a field responder, not just a scientist that had come out to the field. And I think it's a really important point.
Yeah, and there's different flavors of GC mass spec out there. And again, whole other topic we can get into. And they have their strengths and their limitations, very powerful. But again, the trade-offs in terms of not just cost, but just how you manage them. But what we've been talking, folks, if you kind of get the theme, is all these technologies, unlike a four gas meter or a P, these were in the lab for many years. And really what you've seen is the evolution of the engineering, right, to get them out of the lab, to take lab level capabilities and put them to the hands of responders. And then we fast forward to today, or at least going back to 2017, mass spec, that's the MX908. That's our device. Mass spec's been used, goes back many, many years. But until very recently, it's been too big, too power hungry, too cumbersome to be used in the field. But that's what is now being fielded for trace detection. And I know Dave and Jesse, you both spent a fair amount of time with mass spec in your tenure at 908.
Absolutely.
Now, what's the key thing about mass spec? We talked about infrared and Raman, and we sort of got into GC mass spec. What's the big difference, the two sort of areas of types of detection we're getting into? And I'll give you a hint, Dave. One starts with a B, Bravo. One starts with a Tango. What's the difference?
Yeah, really, it's about that bulk versus trace paradigm shift. Yeah. And so really, all of the technologies that we discussed before, infrared, Raman, they really do rely on having a visible amount of material for you to gather up, put inside of the device, and get your answer. And so they're really great at answering that question of, hey, what is this stuff? Whereas trace technologies such as the MX908 and frankly, even the immunoassays and to a degree, even PIDs, right? Mm-hmm. Our photoionizing detector is a trace detector. It's just for vapors. But the MX908 can do that trace analysis for not only vapors like the PID, but also solids. And so we're talking about invisible chemical residues that are left behind by contact with material. There's actually a term for this in forensics. It's called the Locard's exchange principle. And it holds that any two things that interact with one another exchange trace evidence between them.
Ooh,
right.
I like that. That's the first time I heard Dave's. By the way, Dave knew the bulk trace thing. That was just a little teaser. But that's a cool term. Maybe that's a show.
There you go.
What's it called? The Locard's?
Yeah, Locard's exchange principle. It states that whenever two objects come in contact, a transfer of materials occur.
Yeah. I transfer materials all the time when I come in contact with other objects. But we're kind of wrapping up this section. We're talking about trace analysis. And again, we'll get into other shows on the importance of finding trace levels of materials. And I think what we're seeing as we kind of, I mentioned the ATR for FTIR kind of going way back almost 20 years ago. And again, it was in the lab before that. Trace is now, because trace has been around for a while in different forms, IMS technology and things. We're starting to see the evolution of, if you will, that ATR style revolution in trace detection. The trace detector that is just dirt simple for a user to use in the field, and that's kind of where things are going. And hopefully, over the next course of our career, we'll see it get to that point. But we made a lot of strides. JT, I'm going to ask you, throw it to you. All this stuff is great, right? But what's still important apart from all these technologies, these fancy electronic instruments? What do you got to have when you're assessing unknowns?
Oh, yeah, you still got to have your basics. You want to know some real fundamental hazards, like is something corrosive or not? Like, is pH paper still works wonders?
Mm-hmm. By the way, pH is used in the lab. It's actually a lab technology that's taken out. pH, oxidizer papers, all important. and all stuff that we'll get into. So that's just kind of our quick little take on that evolution and some teases into some of the topics we'll get into on other shows here on Hazard Class as we bring you this podcast. As we wrap up, we actually have a thing we want to do every show. We're going to try to bring in one every week, do our best, but we're actually going to put out a trivia question and then ask you, the listeners, to get back to us. Sound good, guys, for the question of the week?
I'm excited. Yeah, let's do it. As long as it's not about pop culture or sports or geography, I'm awesome at trivia.
It's about science and hazard. So does that work?
I hope so. Otherwise, I'll be professionally embarrassed.
All right. Here is the trivia question for this show, the first show. And I'm going to tell you, if you know the answer, how to get it to us. So write this down, listeners. Here's the question. Who developed the five-step method for field qualitative analysis of unknowns? The five-step method. And I'll give you a hint. It's a person's name. The blah, 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 five-step method. So, do you know it, Jesse?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's
don't say it. Don't say
method.
It.
Won't say don't it.
Let you know
the,
Dave?
Let the listeners tune in.
Yeah. No, I absolutely do know it. I had the privilege of actually receiving this training class from the individual himself. He actually came to Fort Lewis, where I was stationed at the time. He trained numerous soldiers before our deployment to Iraq. So he is a legend in the hazmat community and also the Seaburn community in general. And so if you do know this name, I hope that you also had the privilege of going through his training class.
Absolutely. So again, the question is, who developed the five-step method for field qualitative analysis of unknowns? If you know the answer, listeners, what do? You send an email with the answer to Hazard Class, that's H-A-Z-A-R-D, class, at 908devices.com. Hazard Class at 908devices.com. Send an answer, and you get a prize. Let's see what's in the prize closet.
Oh, yeah, 908 oven mitts, right?
No, we ran out of the oven mitts. You get a set of 908 steak knives. That's what's on the in the prize closet for this week. Actually, we didn't run out of oven mitts. They didn't come in. It's a supply chain problem. So hopefully, they'll come later. Also, if you want to send us some show ideas, topics you'd like us to cover, guests we should have, any complaints, accolades, send them again to Hazard Class at 908devices.com. This has been great. Guys, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, good stuff.
I look forward to
talking to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to revisiting some of these topics in detail and getting just to discuss some of these technologies.
Yeah, will do. All right, great. Thanks, guys. So tune in next time for another episode of Hazard Class, the show where, if you're not careful, you just might learn something.
Well, that's it. Hazard Class dismissed.